Good morning.
Good morning.
Today's homily in six words. Not a walk in the park. Not a walk in the park. The subject of that phrase is being the good shepherd is not a walk in the park. And the object of this reflection is the 23rd Psalm. There's value in this reflection because this psalm is overly familiar to us. And it tends to have a sort of romantic greeting card tone to it. And the standard images associated with it tend toward Jesus looking kind of like a bearded lady in a spotless white gown with a gorgeous red wrap, manicured, pedicured, waltzing over AstroTurf with a prize-winning flock of cuddly lambs on a shiny day in May. This may have been what prompted a modern shepherd, or perhaps I should call him a sheep herder, which gives you more a sense of what a shepherd actually does. His name is Philip Keller, and he is someone who spent many years back in the last century herding sheep. And he took it upon himself to write a book titled A Shepherd Looks at Psalm 23. It provides us with the actual practical details of each line of the psalm. It's an eye-opener. I'm going to go through the verses one by one and then unpack the details. My shepherd is the Lord, I shall not be in want. Some of you have heard me say this before. Sheep are not the sharpest knives in the drawer of the animal kingdom. Which, by the way, is why domesticated sheep cannot survive without a shepherd. Left to themselves, sheep are directionless and prone to wander. Even if you put them in a perfect environment with everything they need, sooner or later they will just wander off. Sheep are defenseless. Almost any other domesticated animal can be returned to the wild and will have a chance of surviving, but not sheep. They won't fight and they can't flee. And there's no way they can frighten away even the mildest of predators. They do have an instinct to flock together to keep safe, so they're hotwired to follow each other blindly. If the leader gets lost, the rest of the flock gets lost too. If the leader walks off a cliff, the rest of them are going off as well, guaranteed. Without a shepherd, they would be in want of surviving. They're entirely dependent on the shepherd for everything. He makes me lie down in green pastures. This is not as simple as it sounds. Sheep have very structured eating habits. At 3:30 in the morning, they start eating and then continue until mid-morning when they rest. So the shepherd has to direct them first to rough grass, then to smoother grass, and then finally the fine sweet grass that you would find in a green pasture. And you got to get there just about 10 o'clock. So they can lie down and take a snooze. He leads me beside still waters. Sheep will not drink from running streams. Whitecaps frighten them. So the key word in this line is still. If there aren't any still waters, the shepherd will have to go and make little pools with rocks or dirt so the sheep will drink. Even though they have to drink, without the right conditions, they won't. Did I mention sheep are high maintenance? He guides me along right pathways for his name's sake. Though I should walk in the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. There actually is a valley of the shadow of death in Palestine. It's a narrow path, 4 miles long, on the way from Jerusalem to the Dead Sea. The walls of this valley are about 1,500 feet high, and the width is rarely more than about 15 feet. Only one path goes through this valley, and it's about a foot wide. Twice a year, the sheep have to go through this valley to get to the other side because of changes in climate. And there are three dangers there. Number one, there's a ravine in the middle of the path, halfway through, and the sheep have to be coaxed to jump over it. If they fall, the shepherd has to take the crooked end of his staff and pull them up. Number two, there are wild dogs and wolves prowling in the valley. When the shepherd sees one coming, he has to run up front and frighten it away with the sharp end of his staff. So, your rod and your staff, they comfort me. Number three, there are sharp rocks all around the sheep. So at evening, as the sheep enter, one by one, into the door of the community sheepfold, the shepherd has to inspect each one of them individually for cuts and for fever. For cut wounds by rocks or thorns, the sheep's head must be anointed with oil. And now here comes my favorite Psalm 23 fun fact. Any sheep with a fever has to be treated by having its head plunged into a basin of cold water. When the shepherd does that, takes the animal and lowers it into the tub of water, naturally some of the water is going to spill over the sides of the basin. So much for poetic notions about the phrase, "My cup runneth over," which I always imagined had something to do with big glasses of wine. I hate to tell you, but "my cup runneth over" has nothing to do with wine and everything to do with sheep dip. The point of it all is that no real shepherd would have that manicured, pedicured, your hair holds up even when you don't look, that they so often have in pious religious art. Shepherding is very hard work, all the more so because sheep are so dependent, they would be absolutely lost without the shepherd. Now, here's my old hobby horse. Are we like sheep? I feel a song coming up. Are we like sheep? No, that's already taken. Where were we? Humans are creatures of habit. But that's a good thing, right? Habit is an evolutionary benefit. Habits make our lives easier because we don't have to think about what to do every minute of the day. We just do it. Which is fine for ordinary activities of daily living. It's not fine, however, for the spiritual dimension of life. The crucial difference between sheep and us, the habits of sheep are determined and directed from outside by the shepherd. Our habits are determined and directed from within by us. We are not prisoners of our habits. We have the capacity to do something with our habits. We can drop habits that aren't helpful and create habits that serve our aims and goals. In a word, the difference between sheep and us, we have agency if we choose to exercise it. The challenge is, the opportunity really, is to create habits that advance where we want to go and who we want to be. Which brings us to the focus of our adult formation programming post-Easter and pre-Pentecost. Rule of life. Creating a rule of life is about creating habits that serve our desire to live into our Christian vocation. One of my favorite, I guess I'd call it an admonition, one of my very favorite admonitions along these lines was put forward by G.I. Gurdjieff, a religious sage of the 20th century, who repeatedly told people, "Don't say, I am a Christian. Instead, say, I strive to be a Christian." This is a commercial. From now until the middle of May, Father Jared is leading a session on rule of life in the time slot between the 8 and 10:15 liturgies. Not everybody can get there, but the good news is you don't have to be there to hear it. All the sessions are video recorded and posted on our website soon afterward, where you will find not only the video, but also a written summary of the session created almost instantaneously every Sunday afternoon by our brilliant, hyperkinetic, peripatetic director of communications, Matt Davis. If you create one new habit, that is a rule of life. It doesn't have to be carved in stone or published in the Congressional Record. If it doesn't work out, try something different. If it does work out, tell someone else, because that will hugely increase the likelihood that it will stick. So here's your takeaway for today. Take a look at what's out there in tradition and in our own day and time with respect to activities and practices that support our striving to be Christian. Experiment. Try some things out. And if you manage to create a new habit, a personal rule of life, let someone know. And it's just as simple. Find a friend, look them in the eye, and speak four words. My cup runneth over.